are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
Hey everyone, it's been a great week for me. For England fans, and excellent news for bars and pubs. Not so much for Serena Williams, though, who had to bow out of Wimbledon, injured and frustrated at not having been able to win her 24th title. And before anyone asks, I've not developed an all-consuming passion for sports. What I am deeply interested in, however, is Serena Williams and her career where it is today. Along with billions of others, I've always been a fan of this hugely talented, hardworking sportswoman who has been almost invincible for the longest period in time. She has managed to maintain her ranking and status in the world through sheer perseverance, shattering records until one day she could not. Should she give up and fade away? With a personality and drive like hers, it is very unlikely. I believe that the game is not as much fun. Now it is more about besting herself and breaking a record. I'm no tennis expert, nor am I her coach. But what I can see is a woman who is at the top of her game and has been great at what she does for the longest time ever. As a woman and as a leader, I feel we don't give ourselves the permission to stop being relentless in pursuit of our goals so that we're not seen as having failed. This mindset negates previous achievements and we begin to identify with that one failure. In that process, we often can't see the wood for the trees. My advice is she should not allow herself to be defined by that one seemingly elusive record and not get carried away by the narrative in the media about this invincible, all-conquering person. Why am I talking about Serena Williams? It is because she's a legend and she's about to turn 40. In a sport where the average age of the top 10 players is 25, she has defied experts by accepting and adapting to the challenges that come with age. And this episode of the Elephant in the Room podcast is about age and ageism and my own experiences with it. I'm no font of wisdom, but a few setbacks in the last couple of years mean I'm less naive about where we land in life. Being good at what you do does not necessarily translate into success. The long and short of it is that I realize that my career does not have to follow a linear path, that there are different routes to leadership, and that the definition of success is different for different people at different stages of their life. Have I said different too many times? For me, unfortunately, I hit a roadblock, or should I say a wall, at a time when I thought I'd be doing some of my best work. What with two of the three kids happily settled in their careers and the third one on his way to completing uni. It was an unexpected curveball, not being recognized for what you excel at. And of course, the empty nest didn't help. It was as if my raison d'être had been taken away from me. Like most people faced with difficult situations, I was in denial for some time and then very angry. But this anger propelled me on a journey of learning and the launch of my podcast, The Elephant in the Room, and subsequently my consultancy, The Purpose Room. Incredibly, it also freed me up to do things that I'd been planning to do for decades, volunteering my time for the charity sector, working with women to unlock their potential, and best of all, being in a position to choose who I wanted to work with and what I wanted to do. Not just thinking about these things, but actually doing them. Not to say that I've suddenly cracked the code and become an insider. I'm still an outsider, but I'm fully in charge of what I'm doing and the choices I'm making. Unlike Serena Williams, most women tend not to have a plan about their careers. They work very hard to succeed. Those with caring responsibilities struggle with it until they've emerged on the other side where they find their own roadblock waiting for them. Can planning actually eliminate all their problems? No. But what it can do is give you a good view of what is likely to come next and how you could overcome those hurdles or at least work around them. You won't go on a trek without planning the route. You won't go on a trip without thinking of the pros and the cons and the finances. So why do we continue to disregard and not plan for our careers? When I spoke to Amanda Fohn, the founder of F1 Recruitment, late last year, she said something that resonated with me. And I quote, "When you meet a woman that has got to the top, it is not coincidence. It is not. It is not luck. It is choices that they made," unquote. And for most people with caring responsibilities, these continue to be very hard choices. And often for women returning to work after a break, the elephant in the room is not whether they have the skills or the ability to do the job, but that they want flexible working options. Can they work for 3 days, 4 days, 2.5 days, or different times around their caring responsibilities? It is their ability to voice their needs, to feel that they will not be penalized for asking. The one good thing that has come out of the pandemic is that organizations are more amenable to considering people's or individuals' needs around flexibility and remote working. Will that make things easier for women, working women? Since I'm a glass half full kind of person, I'll say that it is one down and 100 other barriers to go. But I'm very hopeful that in the next decade, women will dismantle more barriers than they have in the past 100 years. There are incredible women and organizations working relentlessly to pave the way. So there is much to look forward to. When I launched my consultancy, The Purpose Room, last year, it was about finding my why. The idea of the consultancy took seed when I was on a quest to find my own North Star. It wasn't easy. I had to step back, take time to breathe, and accept where I was. I hadn't given much thought to my career trajectory, even though I loved what I did and excelled at what I did, and I continue to love what I do. My family and caring responsibilities always determined where I was on the journey. If I became a leader and led an agency, it was by chance and not because I planned for it. It was also because I was good at what I did. All the soul searching and learning led me to discover that in my 50s, purpose has a very different meaning to what it was a decade ago. Now, it is about being intentional and authentic towards reaching a desired goal, and most importantly, towards challenging the status quo. Today, it means working towards making the world better for me as well as for others. Now I'm obsessed with finding ways to make a real difference. A big part of what I do is about giving back and positively impacting the lives of others, family, networks, community, society, and the world at large. The 12 Weeks to Leadership program that we run under the aegis of the Purpose Room is about helping all women understand the labyrinth of cultural and systemic issues that can impact women. And this empowers them with a deeper understanding of the key blockers to career progression. So being over 50 in the end has turned out to be a liberating experience for me, though I could have done without the heartache, the closed doors, the lack of support. But I'm no longer waiting for someone to lead the way or enable change. I have built my own networks, launched my podcast so people without a voice have a voice. And I try to live a purposeful life every single day. I want to make every day count. My role now is of an enabler and facilitator. Not everyone needs to jump through the hoops and suffer heartache. Like I said earlier, I embarked on my learning journey because I hit a roadblock. That roadblock had been building up for years. Decisions I'd made in my 20s and 30s and choices in my 40s, they had all converged to be a barrier that was almost my undoing. The choices combined with my intersectionality, ethnic minority woman in her late 40s, without the networks in the industry, that was my undoing almost. I could not speak up or speak out. This is classic double bind most women face, which brings us to the question of the makeup of the PR industry. We work in an industry that is notoriously ageist and gravitates towards younger people, not because they're cheaper to hire, but because leaders believe that older people are unlikely to have the skills or the flexibility to collaborate and engage. And hand on my heart, I have nothing but respect for young people.
The need for agencies to be representative and reflect the societies in which they operate has gained ground in the last year. And agencies have stepped up their efforts to be more inclusive and diverse. Ageism, however, continues to be a non-issue and is not on the agenda for most. Our working culture favors younger employees, and most leaders actively enable the narrative of younger workers as the silver bullet to bridging the skills gap and business success.
Recently, WPP CEO Mark Read stepped right into it when he declared at an investor call that the average age of someone who works at WPP is less than 30. They don't hark to the 1980s, luckily, he said. He got panned for it on social media, but did not lose his job. Ageism and being ageist is still not a thing for which you lose your job. The reality is Mark Read said what most leaders believe and promote. He just got caught speaking about it. It is ironical that this came from a 54-year-old white man. He's emblematic of the wider issue at the leadership level. Being older is not a problem for everyone. It is a problem for the disenfranchised, for those who are older and do not have either the power or the networks to make themselves heard or make their voices count. Brands are constantly identifying new ways to reach younger audiences, millennials, Gen Z, and younger demographics, often competing for their attention. Why do they continue to disregard the staggering 23 million people aged over 50 in the UK? People who have the money power. Is it youth bias? Bias towards what is new? And as a PR industry, we have to take some responsibility for this. We are complicit in this. In April 2019, when Vogue and L'Oreal published a special edition of the magazine celebrating women over 50, it aimed to challenge stereotypes and positively shape perception of age through representation. And I'm sure it was some smart PR practitioner somewhere or in their own team who gave them this brilliant idea. So it is not as if people don't understand issues around ageism. It is just that we choose not to act on them. I'm not sure if you know, but population aging is one of the four global demographic megatrends. By 2050, 1 in 6 people in the world will be over 65 years of age. A UN report on world population aging talks about how declining fertility and increasing longevity is going to lead to a continuously growing share of older persons in the population. It states that preparing for economic and social shifts associated with aging population is essential to ensure progress towards the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals, including in the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. Trends in population aging are particularly relevant for the goals on eradicating poverty, which is SDG 1, ensuring healthy lives and well-being at all ages, SDG 3, promoting gender equality, SDG 5, and full and productive employment and decent work for all, SDG 8, reducing inequalities between and within countries, SDG 10, and making cities and human settlements inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable, SDG 11. From where we are today, I can see us not being able to make inroads on most of the SDGs. It was my father's life aspiration to retire at 50. He finally did at 55 years of age. Me, I have just found my calling. I don't see myself retiring anytime soon. This is also my second innings, the first part of my life, the first half of my life. I'll say I did what I had to. I've also suddenly found my voice as an individual and the courage to stand up for my beliefs. I'm sure this is not unique to me. Age and experience can free you up to speak your mind, say it as it is, and be yourself. What could be better than knowing your job and having the ability to give clients advice without having to sugarcoat any of it, especially at a time when people are beating the drum for authenticity? Like racial inequality or any equality, ageism is not new. It has been around for eons. So why does it matter now? It matters when you think of how long we are likely to live, that the age for pensions is constantly being pushed back, that we need to work for longer to be able to lead a good life, often through necessity rather than choice. But it is also because we still have a lot to contribute to society. Working helps us remain socially connected and gives our lives a purpose. To make this a reality would mean dismantling biases embedded within organizations and recruitment processes, including myths around older people. They're not good at collaborating, are not savvy and don't understand latest social and digital trends, don't respond well to authority, they want a higher salary, they will undermine authority or lack of it, and that this job is just a stopgap for them. When I was still in the job market, I continuously heard from various recruiters about the skills shortage in the industry. Things have not changed drastically since, but recruiters continue to disregard a huge chunk of the talent pool because it doesn't comply with their idea of who would be a good fit. Organizations need to start thinking about how they can utilize the skills and vast experience of this demography. Much work needs to be done to create the enablers for an inclusive and equitable workforce. Why don't organizations take a holistic view of the talent pool rather than taking a siloed approach at inclusion? The current approach for most organizations is not fit for purpose. They don't know how to engage with senior talent and may lack the impetus for doing so. And neither do recruiters. If nothing else, the Equality Act can serve to be a deterrent for discrimination based on age. In the past, even the TUC has called for measures that extend working lives without further widening inequalities. We know that the number of people over 50 in employment has been steadily growing over the last two decades. However, the pandemic and subsequent disruption across industries has especially impacted older workers. More than 1 million workers over the age of 50 are still in furlough, raising fears of a new wave of redundancies for this age group. The biggest risk being that those who drop out of the workforce are twice as likely to remain long-term unemployed. In a recent Center for Aging Better report, half of the workers aged 50 to 69 say the job is excessively demanding, and around 1 in 3 say they have a lack of control at work. It says low control and high demand roles are damaging in short-term and unsustainable over the working life. A McKinsey research shows that 25% of employees' overall life satisfaction is determined by their job satisfaction. The most important factors in job satisfaction are having an interesting job and having good interpersonal relationships. What can organizations do to integrate senior talent and treat them as valued members of the team and enable job satisfaction? How can leaders support them in this journey? As practitioners, we constantly work with clients to get their campaigns on front page of newspapers and create a buzz on social media channels. So we are best placed to champion age inclusivity within the industry and with our clients. A potential starting point is challenging traditional representation of over 50s in the media that perpetuate harmful stereotypes and devalue the contribution that they make to business and society. It also means that people in general, and women in particular, should also take ownership of the future and not leave everything to chance. Have a plan and review it every 5 years. Engage in continuous learning. Leverage your strengths against future skills. Be an active part of industry networks. Become your own advocate and champion. Age is not just a number. It is your backstory. It is your life experiences. It is about your failures and successes. Don't allow a number to define who you are and become a barrier to living your life to its full potential. Thank you for listening to me. This is your host at the Elephant in the Room podcast, Sudha Singh.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.